home, Gene. Today, it's keep Gene home. What is next? And talk about your message for both the DHS Secretary Mayorkas and for President Biden and for immigrants and activists around this country.
Well, for immigrants, I won't tell them, don't give up. Don't give up. Don't be afraid to fight. Fight for your case. Fight for what's right. We deserve to be here. America has always been a country of immigrants. And nothing has changed in the immigrants world. People travel to here just to find a better way to live, to support their families back home. There's nothing changed in the immigration world. You can talk about 100 years from 200 years ago. It has always been the same. You move somewhere to flee. You flee your country for persecution, for poverty, to find a better way to take care of your family. Imagine all these Haitians who walks 11 countries, Amy, just to get to the Texas border, and then you put them back on a plane to say, no, you're not welcome here. It's racism. It's racism. That's all it is. Haiti has always been suffering from racism in this country. And we know that. I think it's time for the Biden administration to take a second look. You cannot have these people suffering just to knock on your door, and then you take them back to a country where you know there's no government. And it's really hard, but it breaks my heart. And I hope the Biden administration really think twice. And they need to take a second chance. And I will continue to speak out. I'm not going to give up. I will be there.
We have to leave probably. It there. But again, welcome home, Gene. That's Gene Montreville, Haitian immigrant and activist, just back in New York Monday. And Alina Das, Gene's lawyer and co-director of the Immigrant Rights Clinic at NYU School of Law. Special thanks to Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
I may never have met you. We don't go way back. Maybe we wouldn't even be friends if we did. But when you wear a mask, you have my respect. Because your mask doesn't protect you. It protects me. I wear my mask to protect you. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
New York State Domestic and Sexual Violence Hotline, 800-942-6906. When your home isn't safe, call, plan, chat, call 911. 911 is still available for emergencies. Plan, call 800-942-6906. Access remote counseling through your local DV program. Chat thehotline.org. Chat with National Domestic Violence Hotline. For your safety, add the DV hotline under a fake contact name to avoid suspicion. Create a code word for friends and family that will tell them you need help. Know the areas in your home with a lock on the door. Prepare a go bag with important documents, medication, and extra clothing. Tell your family and friends where you will flee if you need to leave urgently. Talk with your children about safety so they have a sense of acceptable situations. The New York State Domestic and Sexual Violence Hotline, 800-942-6906.
WUSB, Stony Brook.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm here.
And we're being joined by Mike Juhas.
Well, this is a special treat.
It certainly is. It's been about, 75 years since we've been on the air together.
It has been almost that long. It's been decades, but not quite seven.
Well, the only way we could get Mike onto the air was to go to where Mike was, and that is basically on the banks of the Mississippi River in Wisconsin, where we literally are sitting right now.
Indeed we are, and in your view, field of view here, you have a view of the Mississippi River.
That's generally what being on the banks of the Mississippi River would entail, yeah. I see the Mississippi River. It's a grand old river. You can see all the way to the other side, which I believe is Manitoba.
Is Minnesota.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I meant. And there's, there's water, obviously, and occasionally you have boats going down that water.
Perhaps we'll see one here on the radio.
That would be exciting. And also you have cars like this one. So you have all means. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention you have trains, too.
Trains as well. Did you notice that car had bicycles on it?
No, I didn't notice that.
It had bicycles on it.
Well, that's certainly something. So I think that covers just about everything. I haven't seen an airplane, but I'm sure one of those will be around soon.
Well, it's cloudy, so you won't see very many today.
We could hear them. But tell us something about the train tracks, because, yeah, there are two train tracks relatively close to us, obviously closer than the water. And if we're lucky, we just might see a freight train go by.
Or at least we'll hear one. Yes, we're situated here in western Wisconsin. I like to call it the west coast of Wisconsin, and the main line of the BNSF Railway happens to pass by right by here as well.
That's pretty amazing. So you must see some pretty interesting things go by.
I do, and there's a lot of non-interesting things that go by as well. There's lots of trains. We see, on average, about 30 trains a day pass by here. And then across the river, there's the Canadian Pacific's Soo Line Railroad over there, the former Milwaukee Road main line. And they run about 20 trains a day as well.
That's an amazing amount of trains, just all day long, trains going on one side or the other. But it's all freight, right?
Mostly, but not all. Amtrak runs its Empire Builder across the way on the Milwaukee, former Milwaukee Road on the Soo Line. And it's a daily train between Chicago and Seattle and Portland.
That almost always makes it to its destination.
Almost always. They didn't a couple weeks ago. But I hope they do tonight, because I know some people who are going to be on that. Oh, you, in fact.
That's true. And by the time you hear this, we will have already been on it. So hopefully we will have made it to our destination, which is either Seattle or Portland. I'm not sure which yet. We'll make up our mind on the train. So Mike, it's been so long since you were a native of Long Island. You've been to upstate New York, you've been to Philadelphia, you've been to Waukesha, Wisconsin. I just love saying that. And now out here on the west coast of Wisconsin, you've seen a lot.
I've been here and I've been there. Yeah, but I have not traveled nearly the amount that you and Kyle have.
Well, not physically, but I think spiritually, mentally, you've been many, many places, and your knowledge of trains, oh my God, just the things you've been showing us over the past couple of days. Explain the technology, because we don't have a radio with us at the moment, but you were playing the radio of the train going by, and there's all kinds of computer sensors and announcements that are being made. Can you give us maybe a brief guide to that?
Well, sure, and perhaps if Kyle wants, he could run into the house and get the radio, and if we get lucky and a train goes by, we will hear that. But, every 10 or 15 miles up and down the tracks are defect detectors. And what these detectors do is they detect whether the train has a hot wheel or a hot axle bearing, and it will enunciate on a dedicated radio frequency that look at this. Kyle has brought said radio. We'll play with this and we'll get it on and see what we can do here in a moment. But it will a computer generated voice will discuss the condition of the train.
Now, that is an incredible thing, because when I first heard that, I heard this disembodied computer voice basically counting the number of wheels that had just gone by. And through that, you're able to tell how many cars on the train just passed by. And it tells you if there are any defects in any of those wheels. And that's you know, pretty incredible.
Yes. Yes, it is. I think it's a great use of technology, and that's making the nation's railways safer by proactively preventing wrecks.
Yeah, just to realize how much is actually happening out there. It's not just a train going by. There are all kinds of people communicating back and forth on the radio, within the cab of the locomotives, and you see many locomotives go by as well. Sometimes three or four in the front, sometimes a couple in the middle, because it's actually two trains, and then sometimes you see one at the end as well.
Indeed, those are referred to as DPUs, distributed power units. So there's, you know, typically a couple, two, three in the front, and then there may be one or two in the back.
And is there a train approaching now? May it walk us through this?
Well, it is an eastbound train. It's a fast train. Moving relatively quickly. It's a vehicle train. One locomotive on the head end, and these cars are loaded with automobiles going to market.
Now, are we going to hear the announcement after it passes by the defect thing?
Yes.
I'm looking forward to this. So these are all cars being shuttled past us. One locomotive in the front. Do you think there'll be one in the back?
It's possible. There's really no way to know until it goes by.
And are the locomotives counted as wheels?
Yes. Generally, the locomotives are six-axle units, and so the freight cars have four. It's just simple mathematics.
And this noise doesn't bother you day and night?
The doors seal out much of the noise.
Pretty incredible. You have two tracks, so you could have two trains going by at the same time, I suppose.
That happens. It does happen. And that's okay, because it's not twice as loud. But if a train is going by and then another one passes, it no engine on the back.
All right, the train has just passed by, has no engine on the back, and now we're going to listen.
It'll take a second.
BNSF detector. Milepost 317.6. Main 2. No defects. Repeat. No defects. Total axle 242. Out.
Wow. 242 axles. No defects. Can you translate?
Right, so 242 minus 6, because it was one engine in the front.
We went to grade school together, and Mike took math in the year ahead of me, and now we're seeing if that education paid off. Continue.
Yes, thank you. 236 divided by 4 equals, what's that, Kyle?
No, don't help him. He's got to do this himself.
43.
You went to school in Seattle. Come on.
Yeah, sorry, I can't do that in my head.
It's a lot of pressure, isn't it, being on the air?
Oh, my God, man, you're giving me every little...
Okay,
I'm sweating,
I'll step in. So, 242 was the total number?
Yes.
Okay, and six axles per locomotive.
And there was one locomotive.
So, 242 minus six class is?
236.
236 now divided by four, which is per axle there. Well, okay, we could do 36 divided by four is 9. And 200 divided by 4 is 50. So 59?
Sure.
59 times 4 is 236. So 236 plus the 6 axles in the front is 242. I went to Ward Melville High School, just so people know.
I'm sure if we got the math wrong, letters will pour in.
Oh, they're pouring in already, but for other reasons. So that was really amazing to see. That was quite a sight, and... What else is going on in the background? How many times does a train pass by one of these defect detectors?
every 10 or 15 miles or so.
And the people on the train, they have to listen for that and acknowledge it.
Depending on the railroad, yes, they acknowledge among themselves, or they get on the radio and they confirm that they've heard it. But yes, yeah, they do have to take action, especially if there is a defect detected.
And does that happen often?
It happens occasionally.
That is amazing. And you're able to just listen to this freely. There's no problems with people just having radios and hearing this information.
Well, yes, that's correct. You're allowed to listen but not disclose what you hear. That's part of the radio land mobile radio rules, I guess.
Well, hang on. We're currently on a radio station sharing this. We're kind of disclosing what we just heard, so how does that factor in? Uh-oh. Well, it happened a long time ago.
It had to have been at least a week ago.
At least.
Yeah, right.
So, there are no defects.
And it's not in real time, so that has to count for something. Hey, can I say hi to somebody here?
You can say hi to whoever you want.
I would like to say hi to my good friends Alan and Susan Striga from Ridge. Alan is a longtime supporter of WUSB. He was a listener back in the day of The Voice of Long Island. Susan went to high school with me, and little did I know, but they started dating. She was a night nurse, and we played Gregory Isaacs' Night Nurse on our show one night, and Alan heard that. And wouldn't you know, they've been married all this time.
Wow, that's quite a story. Well, maybe they've been taping our shows, too, and if they did tape some of those Voice of Long Islands that we don't have, please let us know.
Thank you. That would be great.
I'm always... someone just honked at you. I'm always just looking for those extra episodes, because we post everything that we do pretty much. And in fact, your voice has been showing up in our lost tape archives that have been posted recently from 1990, 1980s. So your voice might be familiar to new listeners as well.
Well, it sounded different back then. That car that just went by that whistled at us is one of our neighbors, and he is retired from that very railroad. Did he know that we were talking about his old railroad when he drove by? Probably not.
Train people know a lot more than you might think they do.
Yes.
So now, tell us something about how you got here. You've always been into trains. I know back when we used to hang out on Long Island back in the early 80s, you taught me a lot about trains then. It was mostly the LIRR. But you've always had this passion, this affinity. I remember when you moved to Philadelphia, we went down and watched freight trains go by and Amtrak high-speed trains going by at 115 miles an hour. And that was really an eye-opener for me. So I think a lot of my passion for trains comes directly from you. So thanks a lot for that, because it's really taken up a lot of my time.
Well, I'm honored. And it's kind of neat to see this what had been just sort of a nascent interest become a full-blown passion on your behalf. But, no, it's just, it comes from growing up on a street that dead-ended on the railroad tracks. In my case, the Long Island Railroad Port Jefferson branch, way back in the day. I don't know. Did we say in the day, back in the day? Is that a fairly new expression?
Well, it wasn't the day then, so we didn't know what to say.
It was contemporaneous at that point, but, well, in any event, and then moving off the island, you see far more railroad traffic than just the LIRR, and a whole variety of freight, and it's a very amazingly largely developed freight railroad logistics system in the United States.
Yeah, if we had passenger lines where the freight lines were, we'd have the most extensive system, I think, in the world. It's really sad to see that. You have a map that I was looking at from the Penn Central where it showed how the railroad went to all these towns in the northern part of the country. And it was like looking at a European railway map. There was so much coverage. And I just wonder if we'll ever be able to recognize the value of that again. But the question of freight on Long Island, how come there's not more or any real freight on Long Island?
There is. Well, you have personal experience with the New York and Atlantic.
We visited them once, but we didn't really see any freight trains going by. But I know they are. I just don't know when.
At night. So they don't interfere with the commuter trains. And that's part of their deal with the LIRR and the MTA is New York and Atlantic has the franchise to provide freight service, but they can't do it to that cannot interfere with the passenger trains.
So we could see a freight train going by on Long Island. It's not a long 200-car freight train, though.
No, indeed not. No, it's they're all local way freights that that service the local customers. They don't go long distances. They go to Fresh Pond, and where the I had to say that because we talked about that earlier. But they go to Fresh Pond where they interchange with the CSX or the PNW or whomever.
And you told me some other fascinating bit of information as far as car identifiers. If the car identifier ends in X, it's a private rail car.
Yes, privately owned by an entity other than a railroad. So it could be a leasing company. It could be a private, just a private concern, a shipper. It could be owned by the shipper. But if you see a, here's your useless trivia for today, is if you see a freight car that has reporting marks, and as you say, the last letter of the reporting marks is an X, that is a car not owned specifically by a railroad.
But there it is in the middle of a freight train. Does the person or company that owns that car get it back, or is it lost forever in the system?
They always come back. They always find their way home. And they have this this homing pigeon instinct in their own structural DNA. So, yes, yeah, they get back. They get to where they need to go and back again.
Incredible. Now, Kyle, I don't want to leave you out of the conversation. You've witnessed a lot of this stuff for the first time. A lot of Mike's passion and knowledge for freight and for the Mississippi and barges and just knowing what's going on all around, all the time. I don't know. Any reflections on that?
Well, it's been really interesting to go to different parts of the transportation and get more in-depth answers and just learn a bit more myself from Mike's knowledge and the lay of the land here, because it's such a unique confluence of transportation modes.
I hear the whistle of a train coming. Mike, you want to preview what's happening?
Well, it'll be a westbound BNSF train. It's blowing for the two grade crossings in town here. And momentarily it will go by, and after it goes by, we'll probably hear a report from the defect detector.
Okay, so have you ever heard a defect being reported?
I have. Not on this particular detector, but on other ones, yes.
All right, well, the train is approaching us now. And we are anxiously awaiting its arrival. I see one locomotive. I see two locomotives. I see four locomotives. Am I correct?
Looks like it. And it will get loud, and then we're going to have to pause for talking for a second here, I think. Unless you want to talk over it.
Well, we could try that, but I think people appreciate hearing the sound of the diesel locomotive, so I'm not going to interrupt that. Just let that play by itself. I noticed there were three BNSF locomotives there, and there was one Canadian Pacific line. What were you pointing at, Kyle?
It's a piece of prefabricated track.
Oh, being carried by the train.
Yeah, it was like on its side, and it had a big cable around it for rigging for when they pull it out, I guess.
Wow, that was something to see. But I noticed three locomotives. Three from BNSF and one from Canadian Pacific. Is that an international incident? Did they steal a locomotive from another country?
No. That happens rather frequently. Locomotives from competing railroads will end up on other competing railroads.
On competing railroads?
Yeah, well, these guys have a parallel route to those guys. Their parallel route is right across the river. But they get along. They have agreements, and there's accounting, and they find out. Eventually, everybody gets square in the end.
You were telling us about the accounting the other day, where basically things are counted in, was it track miles?
Horsepower hours.
Horsepower hours. Okay, you got to explain that to us.
Okay, so your typical locomotive generates up to 4,400 horsepower, and if it's running full tilt for an hour, that's 4,400 horsepower hours is what's used, what is also depreciating on that locomotive. There's a significant value to that. And so that has to be accounted for. And the railroad who owns the locomotive has to get somehow paid back for it.
So there are a couple of different ways they can get paid back.
Right, either by cash or a return equal amount of horsepower hours.
And sometimes they wind up just kind of giving over the lease of their car to the other company?
That occasionally happens, yeah. They'll transfer the ownership or the lease of the locomotive, and that's the end. No DPU in the end.
Okay, we're listening now. Okay.
Big train.
Okay, let's get our pencils out. 568. So there were four locomotives. 6 times 4 is 24. 568 minus 24 is 544. 544 divided by four, number of axles per car, is.
Not so easy, is
it? It's over 100. It's over 100 cars. I know that much. But yeah, that's how you figure it out. That's pretty incredible. That's amazing.
Or you can get one of those little things that the ticket checkers use when you go through a stadium line and they go click, 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 click.
136, sorry.
And that's how they count, and which is a pretty decent sized train, actually.
Well, that was a longer train than the first one, as our numbers have proved. But boy, that's fascinating. I'm sure there's all kinds of other technology at work here.
Yes, there has to be, and I'm at a loss to tell you what it might be.
Wow.
However, you know, when you come down to it, this is a very ancient technology, and there's one across the river too.
We can hear that. It sounds like it's here, though.
No, it's not across the river. It's right here. It is here.
Another train coming. Oh my goodness. So there we had two locomotives. So right away we can subtract 12 axles.
Right, before it even tells us, boy, there's a lot of lumber on this train too. Look at all that lumber.
Things always going from one place to another.
Generally long distances.
So how far might this train go?
I'd have to look it up, but hundreds or maybe thousands of miles.
And, of course, it gets broken up because of some cars are going other places.
That's exactly 100% correct. Consider it as like a packet ship from back in the day, where it takes little parcels to go everywhere, and then they get split off and thrown off at various places. Same thing happens with trains.
I don't notice as many of the double-stack trains here as I've noticed on the West Coast. Is there a reason for that?
We have plenty of double stacks here. It just so happens that these three freights that have passed by while we're talking now have been conventional freight trains, but there is an awful lot of intermodal on this BNSF line, and trains between Chicago and Minot and Seattle, Tacoma, Portland, lots of them. And they're carrying domestic and international intermodal containers.
It is incredible to see shipping containers and sometimes even truck trailers go by. Oh, and there's an engine at the end this time.
Right, so...
Modify that, add another six.
Another six axles to it, yeah. So how many were there at the front? There were two engines in the front.
Two in the front, one in the back, three total.
Right, so three total. And then in a moment here, we'll get the report.
Anxiously awaiting the report.
BNSF detector, milepost 317.6. Main 2, no defects. Repeat, no defects. Total axle 470 out.
out. Mm-hmm. I like that. 470. So sick of doing this. 470. Six times. What was it? What did we say? Three.
Three locomotives. So 18. So 470 minus 18 is
452.
Mm-hmm, divided by four is
112. 112. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with practice, we might get this right. And of course, if we're not right, please write in and tell us. Thank you.
Don't look at me. The teachers just told us computers were going to do all the math for us. They didn't teach it.
Well, grab your computer and verify for us, would you please?
Well, we have to get the number right. It's so important. Wow. So, any memories, Mike, of Long Island as it used to be? You don't get back there that often, so there must be some things that you would really notice if you were carousing around the Three Village area or Port Jefferson or even Stony Brook University.
I don't know. I haven't been there since the 40th anniversary shindig some years ago. That was a fun time. Got to see the new USB studios. That was fun, which, of course, now are no longer new. But there's probably a sign up that says, welcome to our new studios still. You know, where's the cutoff point? Welcome to our studios. Where does the word new disappear?
Usually when it gets all grimy and you can't read anything anymore. I'm not sure. I haven't been there in over a year, so I don't know what it looks like. Maybe somebody scratched out the new finally.
You have not been there in all? Well, so you just upload your show then. Is that the idea?
Well, look at us. We're here on the Mississippi River. Obviously nowhere near USB studios. But, yeah, even when we are in the area, we do the show remotely. Sometimes, you know, from across town, sometimes down the block. Sometimes we just sit outside in the hallway, but we don't go into the studio.
Hmm. Okay. Well, if you must be that way, I guess there's a reason for it. we talked about being here on the Mississippi River and hardly have given any airtime here to the other mode of transportation that goes through here, is the barges, the towboats that go through. And we got to see a barge, a tow, get locked through one of the Mississippi River locks yesterday.
Now, that sounds bad. Sounds like some barge got locked into an enclosure. And I know that's not what happened. What happened was what was supposed to happen. But maybe you could explain that process and also maybe compare what barges are to trains. I saw they seem to think over there in their facility that barges are much better than trains and carry a whole lot more. But I know you have some countering views to that.
Well, but first of all, let me correct you. And you said that's not what it sounded like, and that's not what it was. It was actually locked into the chamber. So in a sense, you are correct. It actually did get locked into the chamber, and then the water level rose up, and it was able to get shoved through to the other side, to the higher level pool of water.
When you say it like that, it sounds kind of violent and confrontational, but I imagine their way of doing it is a lot smoother and by the book.
Well, you talked to a couple of the guys there. I mean, they're approachable people. They appear to take interest in, they appear to be interested when people take interest in what they do. They're happy. They're happy to share with what they, I mean, he said he'd answer any questions that he had. That was a nice little discussion we had with the fellow, one of the lock tenders here at one of these locks here on the Mississippi River.
They cut their own grass.
They cut their own grass. They do their own maintenance, 100% of it. I didn't know that. I thought they hired a contractor. I thought they hired a local lawn service to do that. But, oh, no. They fire up their own Toro.
You had a specific question about the old buildings that are a part of this complex.
Right. I asked them when it came time to regulate the dam, because it is a lock and dam. They perform both functions. I asked them, is that done remotely, or because they have a big office building here, or is that, do you have to do that at the particular gate itself? They said, oh, no, for operational integrity, I believe is the term he used. You have to do it. You have to be there. You have to have your eyes on it to make sure that there's no debris or anything caught in the rollers.
See, that's why I can never understand when you hear these reports of dams being hacked, you know, from China or something like that, how that is even an issue when really you should be there in person to make sure nothing is going wrong. And if you're just operating it remotely, it sounds like that's really not the smartest way to operate a dam.
This could not be operated remotely. It does not have any instrumentation. It does not have any telemetry. There's nothing. It's old 1930s era gigantic gears and pinions and grease and gigantically large horsepower motors that do all this. But there's not an Ethernet to be found.
And therefore, it's unhackable.
Indeed.
Wow. So walk us through some of the steps that we witnessed yesterday with the barges that we saw going through.
Well, very interesting thing here is these tows, and they're referred to as tows, even though the actual boat that does the pushing is actually pushing, it's not towing, they're still referred to as tows. They can be up to 15 barges long here on this part of the Mississippi, and that's three barges wide and five strings, three strings, five long. And the chamber itself has a dimension of 110 feet wide, 600 feet long, so that's enough to fit nine barges in at a time. And then, so they have to be split up. If there's more than that, the second half of the tow has to remain on the other side. It's interesting to note, though, that the barges, they're generally 35 feet wide, so three of them adds up to 105 feet wide.
Now, I would have gotten that, 105, 35 times 3.
Which means that there is only how many feet on either side when they're shoving them into the chamber?
2.5 feet, Mike.
On either side, correct. That is a total of 5 feet. Altogether. So if they're dead in the center, 2.5 feet either side. Yeah,
that is incredible. Now, if are there locks where you can fit more barges in where they don't have to split them in half?
I believe there is one further down the river somewhere that may be long enough to accommodate a 1,200-foot tow. But here they have to split them all up. And what you asked what the steps were. So the tow will come up. Oh, let's just do this for one that goes through in one fell swoop, because we saw a few of those too. So the tow will come up to the gate. The gate will open. The tow will go into the chamber. The gate will close behind them, and the water will be let out or let in, depending on the direction of which way the tow is going. And then the gate on the other side will open, and away they will go to their final destination and happiness.
And how much time passes for that whole procedure?
Well, with a single lock like that, it can be about a half hour or so. So it takes a little while. But when you have a tow that has to be broken up into two pieces, it's going to take two and a half hours.
And then once they're on their way, once they fire up and go full speed, how fast are they going?
Maybe about 4 knots.
And that's the equivalent of what in land speed? I can never figure out knots.
About 4 miles an hour.
Why don't we just say that then? 4 knots is 4 miles an hour? That seems so much easier.
It's close. It's not exact, but close.
Okay, well, so I imagine while barges are awesome and cool, you kind of have to have a river, right? You can't just build a river.
That's true, and we happen to have one here, and it's known as the Mississippi River. And it was somewhat deep, but not deep enough back in the day. There's that term again. and an act of Congress started this lock and dam system. I think there's 27, 28 of them up and down the river between Minneapolis and St. Louis. And in between those two points, your maximum tow can be 15 barges long. South of there, on the way to New Orleans, you can run up to 42 barges, a tow, 42 barges long.
Get out.
It's true.
Wow. I want to see that now. I want to see that.
All right. Well, you'll have to go south of St. Louis to do it.
Have you ever traveled the river?
No, not yet.
We see riverboats go by occasionally.
We do. We have. In fact, we saw one go by the other night. But we haven't been here long enough to actually put that on our post-COVID list of things to do yet. So,
wow. Speaking of COVID, how are people out here in the Midwest handling it?
Just fine, thank you. Probably very nonchalantly. Probably more informally than, well, I can tell more informally than you and Kyle expecting. So he had his hand up. I think he wants to talk.
Oh, no, I was going to ask about the types of stuff that goes into the barges. And just that last freight car had a bunch of lumber from at least 8 different manufacturers. I saw Interfor, I saw Idaho Four, I saw Canfor. I'm assuming four means forest, but all these companies that make wood. And I was just going to say it might be interesting to know the distinction of what types of materials go on what mode of transportation. But we're talking about viruses now, and I think
We can talk about both.
Those tend to transport themselves in humans, I think, most of the time.
Yeah, we don't need rail cars to do that, that's for sure. But did you know the answer to Kyle's question?
Yes. Any low-value commodity that you need to move a lot of, it's a particularly good commodity to move on the river. And that could be grain, such as wheat or soybeans or corn. It could be aggregates. It could be scrap metal. It could be coal. Could be limestone. It could be caustic soda in a tank barge, which we saw in yesterday's tow.
I often gripe about benzene, and I actually saw one of the caustic soda tankers had a benzene sign, but it was over on its side, so it wasn't transporting that. It was transporting the caustic soda, but it was nice to see where my least favorite chemical moves around and gets traded and so forth and validated, as it were. And it really is fascinating to understand that stuff is it has to be transported somehow, and that is the method of choice. With lumber, you're not going to throw that into a big open barge necessarily, and of course, being able to break up which order of lumber goes where might be, let's say, more practical in rail cars. And it, of course, as you indicated, it's just different commodities using different types of transport that make the most economical and logistical sense, right?
Yes, indeed. And the other interesting thing that I really hadn't paused to consider until we moved here and we started looking deeper into all the various commodities handled on the river is that it's all mixed up. Like that barge, the tow we saw yesterday, it had some covered hoppers that probably had some grain of some sort in them. And then it had those tank barges, and it had the barges full of limestone. And just kind of amazing. It's just not solid corn. It's a bunch of stuff, and this is the building blocks upon which American industry depends.
And that act of Congress you spoke about was not just some pork barrel spending, you know, hey, we have to do this for one particular industry. It's like, no, this waterway is vital to so many industries that are in the American economic interests, and it's really visceral when you're right here on the banks of the Mississippi, seeing what that translates to in real life.
Yeah, and we are on the banks of the Mississippi River, and I realize, looking at this river, this is pretty much the halfway point with the country, right? This is the eastern part, and over there is the western part.
Well, at least it's on one side, the radio stations begin with a W, versus over there, they begin with a K. We were listening to a station with a K this afternoon.
You know, I didn't realize that, but yeah, you're right. Here in Wisconsin, it's W. Over there in Minnesota, it's K. Unless you're grandfathered in, KYW in Philadelphia, or KDKA in Pittsburgh, or things like that.
Right.
Or WCCO in Minneapolis.
That's also true, yes. How did that happen?
It goes the other way sometimes.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
So you took us to an amazing state park in a different state in Minnesota, which took us to the top of a bluff. You want to tell us what a bluff is?
It's like a hill.
It's like a hill, but for some reason out here, there's a lot of bluffs. We have bluffs on Long Island, I think.
Well, here they call them bluffs. And, what you have on Long Island is those bluffs of the North Shore. It's kind of the same thing. When you're down here at river level and you're looking up, you automatically kind of, your brain wants to think that you're looking up the top of the hill, and then the hill goes back down on the other side. Well, that's not true. That's really kind of, in most cases, a plateau up there, and we're down here in a canyon, so to speak. And this whole river valley was carved out by the ancient glacial river Warren way back before your time, even. A long time.
What's that supposed to mean?
Yeah, a long time ago, man. A long time. You know, millennia ago. This area of Wisconsin was never glaciated, actually. That's why we have this wonderful topography of coulees and bluffs everywhere.
Stop. Coulees? Now, you've used that phrase a few times, too, and I had never heard that before. I thought it was a name.
How much time do we have left?
Oh, we have about 9 minutes.
Oh, well, I would encourage anybody to look up coulee in Wikipedia or something. but yeah, they're basically little valleys that are formed by the rivers that wash down over millennia.
Amazing. Fascinating. Now, here on the banks of the Mississippi, the halfway point of the country, do you get severe weather? Do you get hard winters, hurricanes, tornadoes, anything like that?
The occasional tornado, hurricane, no, sir. Hard winter, yes. And Kyle earlier had mentioned he's looking forward to a little bit of winter. And I had to laugh when he said that, because that phrase, that doesn't work around here in Wisconsin. We have long winters, and they may not be any harder than yours on the island. In fact, I would say you probably end up with more snow on Long Island than we do here, at least some years. But our winters just never quit. They just go for on and on for months, it seems like. Well, it is. It is months.
It's supposed to go on for months.
Well, it goes on even longer here. It's just the cold comes early and it stays late.
It's funny. I was talking to a friend earlier who I had visited you with many years ago. We for some reason met in a parking lot and just exchanged pleasantries there. We were in a hurry, I think. But he says that's the coldest he remembers it ever being anywhere in his entire life. That was somewhere in Wisconsin.
We were not far from Waukesha at the time, as I recall. I remember meeting you in a park and ride, and you stuck a microphone out the window at me. You remember that?
Well, that's what I do. There must be a recording of that somewhere, too. Can you tell us something about the people here? Do the people seem different than back in New York?
What is different? People are people, you know. They have universal wants and needs and desires, and folks tend to be a little bit more open here, I think. But yeah, they're generally approachable, nice people. Yeah,
we've seen nothing but friendly people so far. We were talking about COVID before. Yeah, they deal with COVID differently. We don't have to get into that right now, but we definitely notice a different kind of spirit, I would say, but nothing but friendly as far as I've seen.
Well, we're going to get into it. We're getting on a train and we're going into the epicenter of high caseloads, specifically Minnesota right now, peaking, Idaho, Montana. We're going to stick around in this area and keep exploring, and it's weird how it is not going away. But people are still getting on. You have variability and adherence to things, and I think people have a different pace out here, and they have a different sense of proximity to folks than you would in like an urban epicenter in like Chicago or, for instance, New York, where people, they're really, really conscientious and really cautious because there's just so many opportunities to bump into people. I think people might not feel like it's, you know, as dire a situation. Unfortunately, there's still people getting sick, so it's hopefully going to keep improving, and more of the treatments and stuff, it's going to help. But we're going to keep exploring, and we'll report back on the different kinds of things we've seen.
Well, oftentimes we're the only people inside an establishment wearing a mask, but I've never been made to feel bad about that. But again, you know, we'll take the pulse of America as we keep traveling and seeing what it's like. Or we could just stay in our train car too and just be insulated from the whole thing. On the subject of trains, though, going back to the subject of trains, but passenger trains this time, for the first time ever, Mike, we took a version of Amtrak I don't think we even knew existed before, called Amtrak Midwest. What's that all about?
It's just one of the train lines that radiate out of Chicago. And yeah, you brought it up to Milwaukee the other night. You were on a Hiawatha series train between Chicago and Milwaukee, and I was there to pick you up. It was the last train of the day, and we're back to our pre-COVID levels of 7 trains per day between Chicago and Milwaukee. And I was pleasantly surprised to see the large number of people getting out of that train.
Well, I was rather unpleasantly horrified to see the large number of people getting into the train, because I had been told that Amtrak was spacing people apart, and then they say, get all your bags off at the seat, you can have a stranger sitting next to you. So that's why I just sat next to Kyle and said, okay, you know what, I'm not going to have any part in that.
But he's a stranger, too.
Well, you know, yeah, in many ways, but that's another hour. In closing, other bits of Amtrak news, because I know we love to talk about Amtrak and passenger rail, and you told me something very exciting today, that they're going to be increasing the passenger train service, hopefully, from Chicago to as far away as Minnesota.
Right, yes, the Twin Cities Milwaukee-Chicago second train project is actually picking up steam. It got received, finally, its funding from the third final state, which was Minnesota. They were the last state on board. Illinois and Wisconsin had both contributed some funds to making this happen. There's some engineering work, some track infrastructure improvements this money is helping to fund to make the trains go through a little speedier. It's actually going to also improve freight flow on the Canadian Pacific tracks here here in Minnesota across the river. That's going to start, we're hoping, in a couple of years.
You say the addition of this passenger service is going to improve things for Freightline. I'd love to know the secret behind that, because what I've been hearing is Freightlines are complaining about passenger lines, and they're standing in the way of increased service for many of them.
Well, they are, because a passenger train requires a certain amount of track at a certain time, and it takes up some of their capacity. But if they can get somebody to pay for improvements to their physical plant to accommodate those trains, by and large, the railroads are, you know, they're happy to take that, because they know that there's 22 hours of the day that is not being used for passenger train movements, that they can use it to their own gain. So it's a plus for them.
That's pretty amazing. Any other expansion news or just changes in the rail network that you know of?
Amtrak seems to be in an expansive mode right now. They're looking. They have a vision. They have a plan of some places that they want to go that they do not currently go to, like Scranton, Pennsylvania, like Allentown and Reading. They've got these places. They want to go to Green Bay, Wisconsin. There's lots of different places. They want to run from the Twin Cities to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. They want to resume service to Duluth, Minnesota. They have several different places that they want to go, and it's just not limited to there. There's a map somewhere on Amtrak's website that shows you all the places that they have their that they think there's a market for some passenger transportation.
If you look at Wikipedia or just look at the history of train lines, especially when it comes to Wisconsin, you just see time after time various authorities in Wisconsin just cut the whole program. It's like the trains are their enemy. It feels like that might be changing.
I hope it's changing. That would be nice. Yeah, there was an administration here that had bought a bunch of railroad passenger car equipment and had it assembled. Part of the contract was that it was going to be assembled in Wisconsin, and it was. Then the administration changed, and a new governor came in, and even before he took office, he said this $800-some-odd million to fund this expansion, I'm just going to send it back to the feds.
Unbelievable. Well, we seem to have another train coming our way, and I think there's no better way to end our time together than to have another freight train come tearing through.
That sounds like a perfect way, and this has a particularly melodious horn, I've noticed.
It does. I don't see it yet, but I certainly do hear it. And, of course, we will tell you if there are any defects on this train.
This one doesn't appear to be going quite as fast.
Well, maybe he knows he's going to be on the radio and he wants the time to last. I see three locomotives so far. And he's not generally honking here. Maybe if you wave at him, he'll honk at us. That was for us.
That was for the listeners.
That was for you, USB listeners. We got a train to honk.
It's this one appears to be an empty taconite train. These are small hopper cars, these two-bay hoppers, not covered, probably going back to the iron mines up in northern Minnesota.
Amazing. Kyle, any last words from you?
Oh, just want to thank Mike for having us visit and see so many really interesting industrial transport modes in one spot. It's a real treat, and we're just really excited and can't wait to share more about this and learn more about all these different systems and technologies.
And Mike, speaking personally, it's just so good to see you again and to hang out and know you're just as much fun as you ever were. And filled with knowledge and enthusiasm and just always gravitating towards the coolest thing around.
Oh, well, thanks. And I'm happy that you guys have come to visit. We bought this house a year or so ago. We love it when friends from out of town come to visit, so thank you. And I would extend this invitation to every listener, but I'm not going to.
That's probably wise. This train is now coming to an end. It wasn't that long, but let's count how many axles there were as we go out tonight.
How many?
3871, over.
Well, that's actually the dispatcher talking, but here the detective will come out right about now.
I just talked to the radius van. She said she's got a big SUV, so we'll go to DeSoto.
BNSF detector, milepost 317.6. Main 1, no defects. Repeat, no defects. Total axle 5, 3, 8, out.
Actually, that was kind of long.
Yeah, it turned out, well, the cars were short, so it made it seem not as long, but they were, yeah, with a lot of axles there.
I noticed also the computer steps on the humans talking.
Yeah, they don't care.
Great seeing you,
Just
Mike.
Like me, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
We are strong and we'll get through this together. But these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
You're listening to Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB in Stony Brook. And tonight we have a very special show. First, we have up Lily Lewis, activist, New Orleans, and a great singer-songwriter. Some beautiful, beautiful stuff. And a little later on, legendary Black Flag bassist Kira Rossler talks her new solo record. Stay tuned. This is the opening track from Lily Lewis's new record, Americana, right here on WUSB, Stony Brook.
My American heart, my American heart, my American heart is alive with the fire in the promise of tomorrow. I'll speak my story. I'll sing my song. My American heart is alive with the fire in the promise of tomorrow.
From the brand new record Americana, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. That's Lily Lewis, and that was Copper John, and the number before that, Americana, Heart, My American Heart, quite beautiful, as well as the prelude piece and the vocal arrangements. Everything just gorgeous, the production gorgeous. And we're going to be lucky enough in just a few moments to talk to singer-songwriter, activist, and brilliant vocalist, Miss Lily Lewis, and right after this tune here. This is Wrecking Ball from Lily Lewis's new record, Americana, right here, WUSB, Stony Brook. We'll be right back.
See, I don't